Today's shiur is sponsored by Charlotte and Gil Galler. They are longtime attendees of a shiur who are enjoying the fact that they could listen to the shiur from the comfort of their own home. I remember a number of years ago when I gave a shiur, then somebody asked me a wonderful question. They said, "Are you going to say the same thing that you said last year?" And I said, "I'll probably be using a lot of the same words, but I'm going to try to put them in a different sequence. And then somehow, hopefully, the sentence will be mean something else." Well, this time, I'm going to say things that I've said in the past because there's a little bit more that I want to add to it. I'll put it this way. I'm happy with where I am with it. So with that's enough to say right now, and let's begin. Put up the sources. If you actually look at the sources, don't get scared. Of course, they're around 20 pages of sources. That's done in order to intimidate the amateurs so that they realize they can't do this by themselves. So let's begin. So we have a really tragic, unfortunate, perplexing episode that takes place. Our problems begin with the very first verse, the first pasuk of the parsha, of Parsha Korach, where it says, Vayikach Korach, and we can stop right there. Vayikach Korach, and it never really tells us what it is that he took. Vayikach Korach, ben Yitzhar, ben Kahad, ben Levi. Okay, so what did he take? Vidatan, Vaviram, ben Eliav, on ben Pelech, ben Eruim. So what did he or they take? Vayikumul fnei Moshe v'anashim ben Yisrael, chamishim v'atayim, nisei Yedah. So again, what did they take? So we have a problem. We have a dangling Vayikach. It's not clear at all. Targum either translates it perfectly or cops out by saying that Vayipaleg, he makes a machloket. Why Vayikach is making a machloket? I mean, don't quote me on this, but the only Vayikach I can think of is Vayikach ish isha. So you're going to tell me that that's the start of a machloket. So I'm glad I didn't say that. What? Yeah, Mark is laughing. Mark is going to be using this, hopefully not in front of his wife. Vayikach Korach. Okay, so we're not sure what happened. First point. And it stresses, Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi. And this ben Levi, b'nei Levi, is going to come back again and again and again, just in case you need to see it. You can notice it. Again, just, I like to scan sometimes. In Pasuk Zayin, Rav Lechem b'nei Levi. In Pasuk Chet, Shemunah b'nei Levi. So what is the fact that he's a Levi, what does that have to do with the story? Full stop. Middle of the Pasuk, V'datan v'aviram b'nei Eliav. So we have brothers, Datan Aviram, and On ben Pelet ben Reuven, which then leads us to two more questions. One question is, well, what exactly is the relationship between Korach on the one hand and Datan Aviram and On on the other hand? And the other question is, whatever happens to On? On is one of these people who's mentioned only one time, and that's it. He disappears afterwards. We never hear from On again. So why was On a part of this? We'll call it a conspiracy. That's a good word. Why is On a part of this conspiracy, and then suddenly he disappears from this conspiracy? So that is also perplexing. So far our questions are, what is Korach take, and what's the relation between Korach being from Ben Levi with Datan Aviram, and On, who are all B'nai Reuven, so what exactly is this confederacy that has been formed? And then they come in front of Moshe with 250 people, who are now, they're called Nisi'ei Edah, Kiri'ei Mo'ed, Anshei Shem, a lot of very nice things. Nisi'ei Edah, leaders, presidents, princes of the community or the congregation, Kiri'ei Mo'ed, people who are called to the meeting place, Anshei Shem, men of renown. And by the way, you do have a problem, because is that a dangling whatever as well? Is the Nisei Da Kremor and Anshei Shem going on only the 250 people, or is that going also on Datan Aviram and On, or perhaps also on Korach? So that's going to be part of our problem of reading it. And I'm not going to solve all of these questions for you today. Those of you who are will be disappointed, I'm raising the questions, and I'll see how many of them I can solve. But then, of course, I want to know now what is the relationship with the 250 with Korach on the one hand and with Datan Aviram and On on the other hand. What is this added confederacy which is taking place? Now, I'm going to say something which I think is a principle. I thought I maybe made it up, but I certainly didn't. And I actually, late in my preparation, which means this morning, after I already posted the sources and then I sort of fixed them along the way, I found there is a wonderful commentary of the Netziv on this section where he said, word for word, at least one level of what I'm going to deal with. So there's two possibilities. Either I thought of it myself, possible, Or probably more likely, I read the Nitziv at some point and completely forgot it and then was arrogant to think that I came up with it myself, as I said, far more likely. So he raises a question which really needs to be raised, and that is this one episode, and I'm not talking about chronology, is this one episode taking place, or are these a number of different episodes taking place? I'll sharpen that question. Whatever problem Korach has, is that the same problem that Datan and Aviram has, assuming that they are the same? They have the same issues. Is that the same as Own? Is that this, or should we, let's put it this way, are the Bnei Reuven and Korach together and the same? And for that matter, are the 250 people the same? Now, how can we figure this out? Well, one of the things that's going to happen, I'm sorry if I ruin the story for you, and especially those of you who are in Chutz La'aretz don't even get to read this week. You have to remember this for next week. By the way, next week you can be just like me. You'll say, you know, I was thinking of this, and you'll think you came up with it by yourself, just like me and the Nitziv. The punishments are different. So it becomes really simple. Follow the punishments. If they all got the same punishment, then I would be very likely to say that all of them did the exact same thing. So, for example, all 250 people get the same punishment. But that's not the same punishment as, let's say, Datan and Aviram. So that tells me, well, pay more attention because they did not do the same thing, evidenced by the fact that they don't get the same result, which means normally results are causative, right? Something happened that caused them. So if they have separate results, then there was different causation involved over here, which means they did different things. And the other question, all of this is, and where exactly does Korach sit in all of this? Well, yes, Vayikach Korach, and he took something over here. What is it that he did? By the way, it's perfectly possible, certainly in the Nitziv's read of this, is you know what Korach took? He took Datan and Aviram. He took Datan and Aviram and Own. And he utilized them in order to get the 250 people. And therefore, what we have over here are really three different groups. But I said that because of the punishment, but I don't have to work that hard. Let's read a little bit more. Pasuk Gimel, after they're all gathered together, Be'ekalu al Moshe. And by the way, realize another thing. It's possible the 250 people happen to have been there. And they, or it happened, or it could be that they were planted there. Commentaries go in both directions over here. One is that there is this large conspiracy taking place and they're planted there in the audience and someone gets up and makes a statement and these guys are saying, yeah, that's a good point. And they were all planted there and Moshe is looking around, where did that come from? And the other possibility is that, yeah, Korach and maybe Datan and Aviram made such a good point that 250 bystanders say, yeah, that's really a good point. And they were not a part of the original issue. Ve'ekalu al Moshe, and the al Moshe is almost like, sounds like violence, and they gather on Moshe, ba'al Aharon, v'yomer aleihem, and they say to them, so notice, both Moshe and Aaron are being attacked. Rav lachem, you know, you guys went a little too far. Ki kol ha'ida kulam kedoshim, everybody in the congregation is holy, uvetocham Hashem, and God is within all of them. So I want to pause there for a second. That phrase is very nice, and that phrase is very true. Everyone in the congregation is holy and God is within us. That's great. Okay, what's the conclusion or what's the end game to that? The continuation, why have you placed yourselves upon the congregation of God? So first of all, there is demagoguery over here because the beginning of the statement has nothing to do with the end of the statement. Over here, the reality certainly is that everybody is holy and God is within the community. But why do you put yourselves on top of everybody else? Well, I mean, let's just shift this around. No one has to answer now. Is any doctors in the audience there? Don't answer. Let's make believe there's a doctor there. So I can say, listen, everybody's holy and God is in all of us. So why do you get to do surgery? So you know what the answer is? Because you have capability. You know what the other part of the answer is? Because you've trained for this. You know what the other part of the answer is? Because you have the knowledge in this. And you know what? I'd rather have somebody do surgery, not somebody who's holy and has God within them necessarily, but somebody who has training and knows how to do this and has done this before. Which means the argument that everyone is holy and B'tocham Hashem and why you put your souls in everybody else? Well, maybe because they're capable. But by the way, there's another point to all of this. Do any of you remember that point in history where God said, Scott advertised, I don't know where, probably the Wall Street Journal, said looking for a CEO, looking for somebody who can run a big corporation. And Moshe then sent his CV. And Moshe got a lot of references because that's what he wanted to do more than anything. You don't remember seeing that. Or you don't remember reading about the advertisement or Moshe actually applying for the job. A matter of fact, I think all of us know, Moshe never applied for this job. Moshe didn't want this job. Moshe tried to talk himself out of this job. He tried to talk God into relieving him of his responsibilities not all that long ago. And now they're coming and saying, you know, why are you putting yourselves on top of the congregation of God? So this is total demagoguery. And what is Moshe supposed to say now? Vishma Moshe, we pull up enough. Moshe heard this and he collapses. V'deber al Korach. Now I want you to notice what Moshe could be doing is a bit of a divide and conquer over here. But he starts off, he identifies who is the ringleader of all this, where does it start with? He goes up to Korach. Those of you who don't know or don't remember, Korach is Moshe's cousin. Korach is from a very special family and has actually a very important job to do in the Mishkan. V'deber al Korach v'kol adato. So he talks to Korach and the whole congregation. Lemar, now let's be careful. Boker v'yoda Hashem et asher lo v'et ha-kadosh v'kriv elav. Which means Moshe discerns, because of this point of holiness, Moshe discerns that the attack over here is an attack against Aaron. Because it's in the plural. Why do you put both of you in charge? Lamatit asu al kal Hashem. Vayikulo al Moshe va'al Aaron. And everybody is holy. So Moshe is understanding that the attack is an attack against Aaron. And Moshe says something which is either completely innocent or completely diabolical. You can decide. He says, okay, let's try it out. Let's wait till the morning and we'll see who's holy. Whoever wants to come, let's make an offering. God will decide. Zotasu, and here's where it gets diabolical. This is what you do. Everybody take this staffs. Korach v'chol atatok, all of you people. Utnuba emesh, put fire on them. V'simu lem ktorah, to put a little incense there. Lefnei Hashem. Machar tomorrow. V'ya'ish Hashem char Hashem hu hakadosh. Rav lechem b'nei Levi. You really have gone, you know, too far over here. Now, what did Moshe just now suggest? Moshe made a reference to a previous episode. In that previous episode, I hope that what all of us are familiar with, that previous episode is an episode that took place with Nadav and Avihu. If you look at source number 3, V'ichu b'nei Aharon, Nadav Avihu, Ish machtechto, v'inu b'hem eish, v'isimu lektoret, the exact description of what Moshe asks for, v'rekrivu l'fnei Hashem, eish zarasha lo tziva otam, and they bring something they were not commanded to do. And what is the result? V'tzeitzei eish m'lefnei Hashem. A fire comes out in front of God, v'tochal otam, and swallows them, v'yamutu l'fnei Hashem, and they die in front of God. So Moshe just now said, listen, you guys want it? That's the way we're going to do this? Great. Let's do the old incense. Test. Let's try it in the morning. Bring the staffs, bring some incense, bring the fire. And that's why I said diabolical. Now, what does Moshe want? Does Moshe want to wipe all these people out? Or is Moshe trying to wake them up and saying, what in the world are you people thinking? Do you really want to try this? Do you really want to do this? We've done this in the past, and this did not work out all that well. And by the way, more likely than not, what Nadav and Avihu had done was they tried to function as a Kohen Gadol. That's most likely what had happened over here. And Moshe said, really? This is what you want to do? I would have thought that at this moment, again, the way that, you know, and I'm perhaps a little naive, but I would have thought that at this moment, everybody would have stopped. I would have thought at this moment, okay, this is a bad idea. Why would they proceed? And they do proceed. And that, by the way, that's going to be a whole nother level of let's say a source for another point, which is perplexing. Why in the world would they actually proceed? And by the way, the answer is it's one of two, but because they either really believed in themselves or something worse than that, which I'm even afraid to say right now. The fact that it continues, I would have thought that this is just a way of getting them to cease and desist. Okay, we better stop. This is not going to work out very well. I mean, Moshe essentially calls their bluff. You want to be a Kohen? Great. You know, there's the old joke. Why do you want to be a Kohen? Well, my father was a Kohen. My grandfather, no. Their father was not a Kohen. Their grandfather was not a Kohen. Maybe. And there's a lot more to this, so let's continue. V'yom Moshe Korach Shumunah b'nei Levi. And again, listen. Hama'at mikem ki yivdil elkei Yisrael etchem me'ata Yisrael? It's not enough that you already have a great position, right? I do want to point something out. What was the job that he had coming from Kahat? If you go down to source number 2, and there's a little something ominous here as well. This is back in Perek Dalet, chapter 4 of Bamidbar. This is when the preparations for traveling. This is Korach's family. And when they carry the things, don't touch the things which are holy because they will die. And it continues and it says, you know, let's be careful. Pasuk Yud Chet. Al techritu et shevet mishpachot akati mitoch levim. Let's make sure that they don't get wiped out. V'zot asu lehem v'chayu v'lo yamotu b'gishtam et kodesh hakadashim aron uvanav yavo v'sam oto ish ish alavototo v'almaso. So let me explain what we just now read. And I'm going to venture to say something which may be a psychological insight, and I will bow to the psychologists over here to correct me. I think that Korach is suffering from post-traumatic stress. And I think that there are two triggers involved in this. I'm going to say one first, the more recent one I just now pointed out. Korach gets to carry something which the Torah attests is dangerous and can result in his death. Be careful. He's holding what's holy. He's carrying the Kodesh Kodashim. He could die. Okay. Full pause. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol. When the Kohen Gadol goes into the Holy of Holies and he does something wrong, he could die. So therefore, essentially, both of them have maximum risk, but there's a different, I don't know if I want to call it benefit, but there's a different upside to the two of them. The upside of Korach is minimal. He can just die. The upside of Aaron, well, he can die, but the upside to Aaron is he's the Kohen Gadol. And what's probably going through the tortured mind of Korach is, why in the world am I putting my life in danger to be involved in the Kodesh HaKodeshim and I don't get any of the glory? I have the full risk, but I don't get any of the glory. And somehow that twists in his mind as he gets to this point. And by the way, the Midrash blames it on his wife. Don't start up with me, but they blame it on his wife. They push him, you know, what's the matter with you and you're a nobody and so on and so forth. And, you know, why aren't you successful like your cousins? You know, Moshe and Aaron, those boys, no, they made it. What's the matter with you? So she pushes. On the other hand, we'll come to Ohn Ben Pelet's wife, Beli Neder, as we proceed. So I'm saying there could be, you know, one or two times carrying that ark, and you can imagine the sweat involved, this is life-threatening. Now, there may be another point which perhaps doesn't seem connected right now, but I'm just trying to think back if there's any other traumatic moment in Korach's life. There may be another one. When Moshe comes down from the mountain and he's carrying the Luchot and he looks and he sees the people worshiping the golden calf, and then he calls out, he says, Mila Shamelai, and who comes running to him? His family comes running to him. Who comes running to him? His cousins and his cousins' cousins and their cousins. Shevet Levi comes running to him. So if Shevet Levi comes running to him, I would presume that one of them is actually Korach. Now, I just made that up. I hope you all realize that. I just made that up. But it's not such a far guess, because that's who comes. Shevet Levi comes. And Moshe says to Shevet Levi, everybody pick up their sword, go take your weapons, and go wipe out the people that are worshiping the golden calf. And they go and they do this. My question is, I mean, I want to go back to the term I used before. Is Korach suffering from post-traumatic stress? He comes back from the battle. He's got blood on his hands. He's killed people. And now he's got, you know, all of this, you know, adrenaline every time he carries this ark, and he can die at any single moment. And I'm just pointing out that there's two different moments of approaching death. One with his death at his hands when he kills others, and the other is where he has this near-death experience when he's carrying the Mishkan. I'm just asking the question, what kind of impact may that have had upon him? Because obviously what he's doing, and this is what Moshe calls him on, he goes, what's the matter with you? You carry the Kodesh Kodashim. You have one of the best jobs. By the way, it's great to have one of the best jobs, unless you could have had a better job. So he's not satisfied with this job, but I'm just again pointing out the background. And as I said, just consider for a moment that maybe Korach does have some post-traumatic stress. I gave you two reasons, which are not mutually exclusive. It could be a combination of the both of them. So let's go back to our initial description of what happens, where Moshe approaches them, and he says, you know, listen, you got a great job. You know, what's the matter? And then he says this, and I want this part to be very, very clear. Again, you were separated. You have this job of working in the Mishkan. You and all B'nai Levi Itach were elevated. Do you also want to be a Kohen? Now you just now learned something. What is it that Moshe is saying about him that he wants to be a Kohen? Which therefore, I go backwards a second. Who is this attack on? It's attack against Aaron. Why does he give the test right away of bringing the incense? because if you want to be a Kohen, this is the Kohen test. You want to be Kohen Gadol, this is the Kohen test. Nadu Navihu failed that test. So Moshe now is turning to all of these people and say, you want to be a Kohen? So I'm going to say it again. Moshe's read of the situation is that this is an attack against Aaron. Now, ultimately, if it's an attack against Aaron, there's also a veiled attack against Moshe. There's also an attack ultimately against God. But now let's go back and read what happens as we continue this. Moshe then turns his attention. Vayishlach Moshe l'kro l'datin l'aviram b'nei Eliyav. Vayomru lo na'aleh. So they... See, Korach actually engages Moshe and listens to Moshe and does what Moshe suggests. They don't. Lo na'aleh. And now you're going to have one, if you need like a definition of chutzpah, this is it. Hama'at keli tanu me'eret zavad chalavu devash lamitenu ba'midbar. You want us to listen to you? Moshe, you're guilty of malpractice. And listen to the way, again, the chutzpah that they say. Isn't it enough that you took us out of a land that flows with milk and honey in order to take us to be killed in the desert? Ki tisterer leinu gam histerer? Ach lo al eretz zavat chalav udvash avietanu, vatit lanu nachat sadeh bekarem. You didn't take us to where you're supposed to take us to. You failed. Step down. You failed. Heinein ha-shemehim tinaker lo na'aleh. They absolutely refuse. Which means, very clearly, Korach and presumably the 250 people want to become Kohanim. Datan va'aviram have no interest in becoming Kohanim. Their attack is against Moshe, which means that we go back and we think about this confederacy which exists. They don't have the same goals. Datan and Aviram are agitators who want to shake everything up and have new leadership. They want to get rid of Moshe. Korach, presumably, that's what I'm saying, presumably, is interested in becoming a Kohen. And that's how Moshe is taking this. But let's go a little bit further, and I think that all of this will become much more clarified. Moshe gets upset. Vayichar pasuk tedvav. Yichar l'Moshe ma'od. Vayomer l'Hashem. Al tifenu minchatam. Do not pay attention to their offerings. Lo chamor achad mehem nasati v'lo ra'oti et achad mehem. Moshe saying, like, I'm innocent. I don't know where this is coming from. Yom Moshe el Korach. Atav v'kol adatcha yu l'fnei Hashem. Atav v'hem v'aron machar. Again, clearly setting them up against Aaron. You want to go for it? Good, Korach. You bring all 250. And everybody should bring their staffs. So Moshe doesn't back down from that. Let's try this. You and them and 250, right? All bring the staffs. So let's see how this works out. And then he continues and says again, you'll take the ketoret, you'll take the incense, and you put it on. And vayikahel aleim Korach. So I'm going to say this again. He listens to Moshe. He obeys Moshe. He says, let's go for it. Let's follow that test. El kol eda al petach ha'omoid. Vayira kvod Hashem el kol eda. And then God gets into it. And also, this is going to be interesting. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe v'al Aaron le'emor. He badlu mitoch eda hazot. Just move away from them. Vachale otam korach. And I'm going to swallow all of them. Again, we're not clear. How many people will be swallowed? Is this all 250? Is it also Korach? Is it also Datan Aviran? And of course, we still have to get back to what in the world happened to On. And that's a really interesting insight, because that seems to be saying that there's only one person over here who has sinned. And who's that one person who has sinned? Presumably Korach. Which means Moshe, in a sense, is exonerating the 250 people. Because he's saying only one person has sinned. But let's continue and see what happens. And now again, God throws Korach together with Datan Aviran. We don't know what's with the 250. Everybody move away from them. They are called wicked. Lest you get carried away with their sin. They get militant. Now notice a second. Now you're going to know that God sent me. So notice, when it comes to Korach and the 250, we're going to prove that God sent Aaron. When it comes to Datan Vaviron, now you know that God sent me. And this is what I was saying before. I didn't have to go to the punishments. The text itself indicates that we're dealing with two different rebellions. The only question ultimately is going to be which one is Korach really on. Datan Aviron, they are against Moshe. On the other hand, the 250, the challenge is against Aaron, and they want to become Kohanim. Datan Aviron have no interest in becoming Kohanim. They then continue and say, Im kamot kol adam yamutim, if they're going to die natural deaths, right? Elu fukdot kol adam yipaked aleim lo Hashem shelchani. If they die natural deaths, God didn't send me. Again, this is about Moshe, not about Aaron now. V'im briya yivra Hashem upatztaha adama et piha, but if God does this new thing and that mouth and the earth will open up its mouth, ubala otam v'et kol asher lahem, v'idu chaim sha'ola, and they fall into the depths of hell, v'yadatam ki natsu an Hashem ha'elet Hashem, then you'll know that these people got God upset. Now, of course, what we have to ask ourselves is why this particular punishment of all things that Moshe could have said, and I'll answer that soon. And as soon as he stopped speaking, the ground opens up, and it opened its mouth, they all were swallowed alive. They disappeared. And everybody screamed, maybe this is going to happen to us as well. And at that moment, and then the fire comes out. And then the 250 people who were bringing the Torah die. So I'm going to go back again to what I said in the very beginning. We have two different punishments, which indicate there's two different sins. The two different sins have to do with the two different groups. The two different groups are Datan Aviron on the one hand, 250 on the other hand, Korach, question mark still. The punishments are different. On the one hand, Datan Aviron, the ground opens up and swallows them. On the other hand, when it comes to the 250, a fire comes out, the Ketoret, they get swallowed, they get the Nadav and Avihu treatment. On the other hand, let's finally get to it. This suggestion that the earth should open up its mouth should be something which is familiar to all of us. We've heard that phrase before. It exists one other time in Bereshit. And the more we think about that other time, the more that we'll see why exactly it is significant. So what is the other time? We go all the way back to source number 4, which is back in Bereshit. And those of you who know me a long time know that we always end up back in Bereshit. And now we're back into Bereshit in the single digits, chapter 4. That means we're back there now. So Adam and Eve have a son, Cain. And they have another son called Hevel. And what's going to happen, Cain is going to, and I'm going to phrase this in a very particular way. Cain, well, you know what, let me go backwards. At the very end of the story, you all know what's going to happen. Then Cain's going to kill Hevel. And then God is going to say to him we'll go to the very end in Pasuk. Yud Aleph, Ata Arurata min Adama, Asher Patzta et Pi, Alekach et Dmei Achicha Biyadecha. The earth, you're going to be cursed from the land because it had to open up its mouth and swallow the blood of your brother, which means that phrase goes back to the Cain Hevel story. So just in case you think, okay, that's, you know, why is that important? Let me remind you of something else. And that is, there's actually two elements over here which are really important, and then a third one which comes out of nowhere. And first, let me stop and pause and do something else. Who are the 250 people? So there's an argument. I gave you a whole bunch of sources there that I'm not going to go through, who those 250 people may be. If you were to ask me, there's three obvious possibilities. One is that they're very famous people who are very important people who think they should be more important. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that these are people who all are from Shevet Reuven, but we're going to have to come back and say, well, why is Reuven involved in this? Okay, Korach, I understand. We have his post-trauma and so on. Why did these three people, we have a coalition from Reuven, why Reuven? And then finally, who are these 250 people? Well, there's this other possibility. These 250 people, I think the best explanation is either they're also all from Reuven, or they were all firstborn. Why would I think that they're firstborn? Well, the firstborn served as Kohanim. Who is it that feels a need to be a Kohen, a burning need to be a Kohen? So I think the average Jew wakes up in the morning and doesn't say, wow, I wish I was a Kohen. On the other hand, if somebody thinks they should be a Kohen and they're not a Kohen, that will gnaw at them. I mean, I know people, let's say, for example, their father was a Kohen, but they're not a Kohen because their father did not marry the right kind of person in order to pass on a status of being a Kohen. Children in situations like that really lament that they're not Kohenim. My father's a Kohen, why aren't I a Kohen? That hurts much more. Over here, when it comes to the firstborn were Kohanim. They functioned as Kohanim. They functioned as Kohanim probably back at Sinai. They probably functioned Kohanim. But one other point, which now we're going to keep coming back to, I don't know how obvious this is, but they also function as Kohanim at Mount Sinai, not just before Moshe went up, but after, right before Moshe comes down. And that's, of course, with the golden calf. Who worked the Mizbeach by the golden calf? See, I have another suspicion that the firstborn in every family worked as the Kohen in Egypt when they had the Korban Pesach. Every family had the Korban Pesach. Who was the Kohen? I would assume the firstborn was the Kohen. The firstborn was the Kohen, becomes the Kohen, continues the Kohen, and then they lose it. Because they lost that status, that's why it's hurting them so much. That's why they want it so much. So I would assume that all 250 people are firstborn who have been displaced. Who took their place? Well, the one who took their place, of course, is Levi. Shevet Levi, and then specifically Aaron. And that's really interesting. Because if I'm right in what I'm saying now, let me just go one more element of this. Reuven was once the firstborn. So Datan Aviron are from Reuven, who are the firstborn, who are the displaced firstborn. And the 250 are all firstborn, who are displaced firstborn. And now I understand my coalition. My coalition are all people who think that they should be Kohen, whether it's Korach, who is just so close, you know, the right family, but just barely misses it. And then you have Datan and Aviron coming, and Own coming from Reuven, who are the firstborn. And then you have the 250 firstborn. And now everything makes sense because they all somehow work together. It's also interesting, Korach, who has this ability of communicating to these people, I understand you. And I just want to go back to that trauma that he has, Korach has. What was Korach's trauma? Is that, I made this up, but I'm suggesting that he was involved in killing, who was killed, the people involved in this. Who were some of the people involved? Were some of the firstborn? Which means that it's very possible that Korach over here is going off to victims and saying that, you know, I, as the perpetrator of this crime, I want to make this up to you. I want to bring you back to be Kohanim again, because all of this is all messed up. This is not the way that it should be. So again, I'm just pointing out that there is all this confusion, and now I'm going to go back to Cain and Hevel. Because, by the way, first of all, we have the same language, actually. Moshe says to the Levim, come, man, kill his brother. Okay, where do we find man killing his brother? That goes back to Cain and Hevel. It's the same language taking place. But what else is going on over there? Cain and Hevel were both trying to be Kohanim. They both bring offerings to God. And who is the firstborn? Cain. And what happens to Cain? He's rejected. So the starting point of all of Sefer Bereishit, which is all about the firstborn who are rejected, but now it's even better, rejected as a Kohen, is right there in that story. So I go back to that story and say, wow, it's a little more interesting, because I have a Kohen who's rejected, who is the firstborn, and somebody else is taking over. And then I have a man killing his brother, somebody being killed, I have the earth opening its mouth and swallowing it, and now suddenly the language which is deployed in Parshat Korach becomes so much more interesting and so much more compelling, which means, yes, we have multiple stories playing out one in front of the other, including the story of this relative Korach trying to do something. The 250 people, who, by the way, are incredibly sincere. How do I know that they're sincere? Because they think that they're going to survive. By the way, unless there's one other possibility. And the reason why I say it's remarkable that they think they're going to survive is because Nadav and Avihu didn't survive. And by the way, I'll tell you a secret, their father really was a Kohen. But again, apparently what they were trying to do was to do the act of a Kohen Gadol. And they didn't survive. Why in the world do the 250 people think that they're going to survive? So again, I'm going to suggest more than one possibility. One possibility is they don't think they're going to survive. You know, last week we read, at least some of us, we read about the wood gatherer, the mikoshesh. And one of the things it says that he was mikoshesh. He kept on being mikosheshing. He wouldn't stop gathering. Right? He gathers wood. I always am amused with the wood gatherer. He gets his own holiday, Lag BaOmer in Israel. It's a holiday for the wood gatherer. So the wood gatherer doesn't stop, and it says that they give him hatra, they warn him, stop. He goes, no, I'm not going to stop. So according to Tosfot, again, this is trying to explain something I've do the Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yehuda ben Peterah. Those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, let me explain. He's not identified by name. He's just called the wood gatherer. And Rabbi Akiva says, oh, I'll tell you who he was. He was Tzlavchad. He goes, Tzlavchad? So Yehuda ben Peterah says, Rabbi Akiva, you're in trouble. Maman of Shach. That means either way. If you're wrong, you just now said Lashon Hara about Tzlavchad, who was a tzaddik. How can you say Lashon Hara about him? If you're right, God covered it up. How dare you reveal it? What right do you have to reveal something that God covered up? So either way, you're wrong. So Tosfot says, yeah, but what if he was L'shem Shamayim? What if he did this for the sake of heaven? Now, how can you work this out that he did this for the sake? You don't break Shabbat for the sake of heaven unless they just got the decree. They're all going to die. And there are people there saying, whatever we do doesn't make a difference anymore. Our lives are meaningless. All that we have is we have a 40-year life sentence and then we die in prison. We never get to the promised land. Nothing makes a difference anymore. So what does Tzlavchad do? He stands up and he says, nothing makes a difference. Let me show you life makes a difference. And he goes, well, I'm going to break Shabbos and let's see if it makes a difference. And I'm going to prove to you it makes a difference. And he breaks Shabbos. They say, stop, stop, stop. He goes, no, I want to show that everything we do makes a difference. And then he's executed for what he did. He goes, see? It makes a difference. We still have responsibility. Now the Zohar says, okay, he wasn't that educated, but he was motivated. He had ideology. But that's really scary. What if the 250 people have the exact same mindset? Nothing that we do makes a difference. We're all going to die. We have a life sentence. Let's go out with a bang. Let's go out and die l'fnei Hashem. Let's do exactly what Nadav and Avihu do. Did. Let's die like Nadav. And by the way, this is the direction that the Tziv goes. They are holy people. They are tzaddikim who are misguided, just like Tzavchad. He doesn't make that comparison, but I think that helps us understand it. They are misguided tzaddikim, righteous people, holy people, who really want to die in front of God. I don't want to play this game that you sentenced me to 40 years of meaningless life. No, life is never meaningless. Life is not meaningless. But you know what? The people in the camps who threw themselves against the barbed wire, none of us are going to judge those people. None of us. Okay, they didn't want to go through any more of this. This is what they did. But it's so much more interesting than throwing themselves against the barbed wire or the electric fence or whatever it was. These are people saying, yeah, Moshe, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to take the Torah, we're going to go in front of God, we're going to die in the Mishkan in front of God, because what better way is there to go? Because they're holy, and I'm going to add another thing, and misguided. Now that they're holy, by the way, do you really appreciate that everything I've done till now has been based on Pshat? I'm leaving Pshat now. No one has to point it out to me. I know it. So I'm just going to let you know that we're going to go into Chazal now, and I want to see a whole nother level of what Chazal note over here, and then we're going to try to connect all of this again. Just before we leave, there's one more thing that I want to point out, and that is that the Cain Hevel story was reenacted in the beginning of Sefer Shemot. How was it reenacted? It was reenacted that Moshe comes out of the palace and he sees people struggling. He sees people fighting. And he sees a Jew being beaten by an Egyptian. And Moshe finds this incredibly disturbing. Source 29. Moshe grows up and he goes out to his brothers, and not literally his brothers. He sees their suffering. He sees an Egyptian beating one of his brothers. Again, not literally. This is a reenactment of the Cain and Hevel story, except it's completely inverse and different. Cain kills Hevel, who is his brother, because he has no sense of brotherhood. And he does this for no reason whatsoever. By the way, it's also interesting that when he kills him, it says the two of them go out to the field, and Cain says to Hevel, Hevel doesn't speak at all. It's sort of like what the Mishnah says in Avot, that what's a machloket, which is lo l'shem shemayim, not for the sake of heaven, machloket Korach v'adato, not Korach and Moshe. Over here, it's Cain and Cain. Hevel's not involved in this. It's the same kind of thing. He's silent. Over here, Moshe gets involved because there's a sense of brotherhood, and he kills in a kind of a shall we call it a good Samaritan behavior. But Yetzei b'yom ha'sheni, v'hi shnei anashim, just in case you're wondering, Chazal tells shnei anashim ivrim nitzim, and Chazal tells us, oh, nitzim, this is Datan v'aviram. who the Gemara in Nedarim 34, V'homer Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Shemir Chai, Kol Makom Shneimer Nitzim Nitzavim Eino Ela Datan Vaviran. In source 32, the Midrash says as well, Zed Datan Aviran. Every bad thing that happens, this is Datan Aviran. But I want to point out, Chazal is saying, oh, the word Nitzim here, remember they came out and they were militant, Nitzavim, they come out in front of Moshe. And here it's Nitzim, Vayom Al-Rasha, Lama Tekerecha. And Moshe says, you know, wicked person, how can you beat another Jew? You can imagine Moshe grew up all by himself, and he imagines, oh, the Jews must be so great, oh, they love one another, get along with one another, and now he sees how the Jews behave one another. How can you do this? And what do they say? Vayomer, mi samcha le'ish sar v'shofet aleinu? Who put you in charge? Do you realize now that this is the exact same language, the exact same claim as Datan Vaviran? They challenge Moshe. Who put you in charge? So Chazal understand that that's Datan Vaviran. The Chazal focus on the Nitzim v'Nitzavim. It's better than that. It's not just the Nitzim v'Nitzavim. First of all, I want to go back again. The Cain and Hevel story is what's going to end up, as the earth opens its mouth, it's going to end up swallowing Datan Vaviran. And now I have the replay of that story, and lo and behold, Datan Aviran are standing there in the replay of the story, and they say to Moshe exactly what Datan Aviran say later on in Sefer Bamidbar, who put you in charge? So what I'm saying is that, again, I know it's easier when I do comparisons that only have two points of comparison, and here we had a third point. We went from the Korach story, went back to Bereshit, and then we went to the beginning of Shemot, and all of these are connected. And as I said, I'm not sure if I can keep on convincing you that I'm saying Pshat. At some point, I'll have to admit that I'm moving towards Drash. But if that is Drash, by the way, it's really good Drash, in case you don't know it, and you can't even laugh at me now because you're all muted, so this is wonderful. But that was good. But now I want to show you what else Chazal does with this. Because Chazal does something else which is really interesting and really compelling. I want to read a Gemara or a Midrash, and then we're going to go a little backwards in terms of the sources, and we'll get some context. One of the mysteries in the whole story is one in the world happened to Own. Now, all of you know what happened to Own, but there's two different versions of this, one in Midrash Rabbah, one in the Gemara, and they are slightly different. I want to read the Gemara, simply because I find it more authoritative. Amar Shmuel Barav Yitzchak, Yaakov Bikesh Racham Ratzmo. I'm going to skip all of that, and we're going to get to Own. Va'on Sheyashav Ba'aninut. He mourned. Pelet Shenasu Lo Plaot. Wonders happened. Ben Reuven. It continues, it says, Amar Rav, Own Ben Pelet Ishto Hitzalto. By the way, there's something ironic there. Rav had a terrible marriage. His wife caused him all kinds of discomfort. And here he says, oh, look what a good wife does. Own ben pelet ishto itzelto. His wife saved him. Umrla, and she says, my nafka lachmina. She goes, what difference is all this going to make to you? You have nothing to do with this. Imar Rabba, if Moshe is going to be Moshe Rabbeinu, and Talmida, you're going to be a student of Moshe. The Imar Rabba, and if Korach gets in charge, and Talmida, you're going to become a student. What's interesting to me over here is the way the Bavli reads it, if I'm reading it right, and I think I am, it's talking about Moshe. It's a challenge on Moshe. In Midrash Rabbah, it says, Aaron Kahana Rabbah, if Aaron's going to be the Kohen Gadol, At Talmida, you're not going to be the Kohen Gadol. In Korach Kahana Rabbah, At Talmida, you're not going to be. So it's interesting that the Midrash has the attack of Own going against Aaron, while the Gemara has it, the attack going against Moshe. In my mind, the Moshe attack is the correct read over here. That's the correct text. That's the correct understanding over here. So I'll just try. So how does it continue? We're back in the Gemara in 45. Amor la ma'ev v'idri. He goes, what can I do? Havia be'itza. You know, I'm involved in this conspiracy. Bishtabi li ba'adayu. Amrle Yodana, and she says, I know, Dukula Kanishta Kadishta Ninu. I know the entire community is holy. And that's very interesting because what she says is it's sincere. She knows that those 250 people, they don't back down. They really believe they're holy. I mean, by the way, that's part of the part which is amazing here. They really believe that they're holy. And she says, I know they're really holy. Dichtiv, and she quotes the Pasuk, Kikole da kulam ktoshim. She says, I know the mantra. I know what it is, and it's true. Amrle Tuv da'ana mitzan malach. I'm going to save you. Ashkitei chamra, she gave him some wine to drink. Varvite vangine gavai. And she goes and she puts him off to bed and says, sleep it off. By the time you wake up, all this will be over. Otve al baba, she goes to the doorway. Visarte lemezaya. And she uncovers her hair and unbraids her hair. By the way, in the Midrash, it says that both her and her daughter do it. So it adds one more element there as well. She unbraids her hair. And what ends up happening, of course, is that the people coming looking for them called the Atei Chazei. Anybody sees the Hadar, and they turned around and go. And in the meantime, he was saved from the thing because of his wife. Okay, that's one element of the Gemara. The next page, the Gemara tells us something which is unbelievable. And again, in the Midrash, it's just one line after the other as well. This is the continuation. The Gemara tells us something, and I want to explain why I'm explaining this, because you may not understand what I'm doing. Of all the things it chooses, again, first, pshat in the Midrash, if we can do that. Pshat in the Midrash. She says they're holy. I'm going to exploit their holiness. They're so holy that they're not going to look at a married woman's hair. Yes, they'll rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu. That's easy. And that's part of what I want to explain still. They'll rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu, but they won't look at a woman's hair. And she says, I know this about them, which means they're really sincere. And I'm going to exploit their sincerity in order to save you, because they're not going to, they're just going to walk away when they see my hair uncovered. But of course, my question is, why of all things she could have done, does she uncover her hair? Does uncovering a woman's hair have any message? Does it have any symbol to it? It's not enough to say, oh, that's how she saved them. What is the symbol involved in it? So I'll tell you what the symbol is. The symbol, and this is, there's one place in the Torah that talks about a woman uncovering her hair, and what's that? When a woman is accused of being a sota, when she's accused of infidelity, she's accused of cheating on her husband. So the thing she goes through in order to, the sota process, is somebody who's not necessarily guilty. She's only guilty of seclusion with somebody. We don't know what happened behind closed doors. She goes through this process, her hair is uncovered, she's given something to drink, and then she's able to prove her innocence. So what is she doing? She's uncovering her hair. Is there a much deeper point over here? And you all know I'm going to say yes. And the only thing you're scratching your heads and thinking about is, how in the world am I going to prove it? But I am going to prove it, because it's just there staring at us, as obvious as it could possibly be. The only thing which is bizarre is I did not find anybody who made the point that I'm about to make right now. Source number 46, the continuation of the Gemara. We turn the page. Vayakumu lefnei Moshe v'anashim b'nei Yisrael chamishim matayim. And all these things about them. Now, let's take a look at, there's a pasuk here that I want you to see first. I want a little more context. I have to, we're going to delay gratification for you. Sorry. I told you it's here, but you're going to delay gratification. First source, 39. 39, it says, Vayatavu ta'ava b'midbar. The people in the desert, they had this unbelievable ta'ava. And the best way to translate ta'ava is lust. And I can assure you, lust is never good. Now, what were they lusting? So the pshat would be they were lusting, they wanted meat, they wanted food. But lusting always seems to have a sexual connotation. I'm sorry I'm saying that, but we'll see soon. The Gemara will say that. In source 40, it says, Vasasufa Shebri Kirbo, right, they're crying, B'nai Yisrael, and they say, who's giving us food? V'yishma Moshe ta'am bochel l'mishpachotav. They cry to their families, Ish l'petach o'alo, which is interesting. Petach ohalo, this is where she goes, to the petach of the doorway, where there is the crying going on. And over here, Rashi says that what is l'mishpachotav? Al arayot ha'nesrot lahem. They are completely distraught that they fell for this religion, and now they have all these things that they can no longer do. There are all kinds of relationships that they can no longer have, and it's all about sexuality, and that's how Rashi reads it. That is how the Gemara reads it. But again, I'm going to stress, I always am intrigued in the Midrash when it gives us certain symbols. Where did it come from? Over here, she goes to the entrance to the tent. Well, that's what it said happened by the entrance of the tent. It was about sexuality. But notice now what else happens. I want to go back to that verse in Tehillim, the verse in Psalms, and to see how it finesses this. V'yitavu tavam en bidbar, v'yitain lehem sher latam. And God gave them the food they wanted. They were jealous of Moshe in the camp. We're going to come back to that jealousy. La'aron kadosh Hashem, and to Aaron. This is our episode. Tiftach eretz v'tivladatan, and the earth opened up its mouth and swallowed it. V'techas el adat Aviram, and got rid of the entire congregation of Aviram. V'tivar esh ba'adatam, and a fire comes out. Lavat alehit rishaim, and got rid of all of these people, which, by the way, he calls them rishaim. The whole explanation of the Netziv does not go smoothly with this pasuk in Tehillim. But nonetheless, notice something. There is this jealousy that takes place. Okay, good. Now let's read the Gemara that I was referring to. The Gemara is again in source number 46. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, third line at the end. Well, sorry, before that even, beginning of the third line. Vayishma Moshe v'yipol panav. And Moshe heard and he fell down. He collapsed. Now, when I said this, or initially when I read it in the text itself of the Chumash, that Moshe hears what? He hears that complaining. Mashmo Hashma, what did he hear? Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, shechashdu be'eshet ish, that Moshe was accused of sleeping with a married woman or married women. Shenemar, it says, ve'yaknu le'Moshe, that they were jealous of Moshe, but the word ve'yaknu is also used in the Parsha of Sota. Go further, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Yitzchak Malamed, shekol echad v'echad kineh et ishto me'Moshe. Every single person warns his wife, don't be alone with Moshe. By the way, if any rabbi ever has a bad day that the congregation gives him a hard time, maybe they can feel a little better. You know what they said about Moshe Rabbeinu? They accused Moshe Rabbeinu of having affairs with married women, and the mind boggles how you can say such a thing. Moshe Rabbeinu, this is what they say. And can I remind you of something? Moshe separated from his own wife, and instead of, right, because he understood he always needs to be on a level to receive nevuah, to receive prophecy, and what are they reading it? He's got no time for his wife because he's chasing after everyone else's wife, and that's what they're saying about Moshe, which is, how evil can you be? You could say, okay, Moshe, maybe you're not the best leader. Maybe you didn't get us to the promised land. Moshe, to accuse Moshe Rabbeinu of this, you know, we wonder today, why don't we have better leaders? Well, look at the generation that Moshe Rabbeinu, what they did to him. It's unbelievable. Those of you who don't know why America never had a chief rabbi, so it's not necessarily true. At least New York had a chief rabbi, and his name is Rabbi Jacob Joseph. He was the Maggid of Vilna. He had a primary role in Vilna. Comes to New York, they killed him. I won't say literally they killed him, but they did. They killed him. He tried to make the place kosher. They said, what are you doing to us? They threatened his life. He ended up having a stroke and spending the last couple of years, and they killed him. They killed him. And he was not able to... He was the Maggid of Vilna. He was a student of Yisrael Salanter. He was on an incredible religious level, and he got to New York, and they killed him. Moshe Rabbeinu could be accused of every single sin. He is accused of being with married women. So again, now let's go back and take a look. And I hope that all of this will begin to make sense on a whole other level. The section in 47 talks about the section of Sota, Ruach Kin'ah, when a man is jealousy, the Kin'ah, and then he warns her. That's the lesson of Kin'ah. And you warn your wife not to be secluded. And that's where the whole thing of Sota, and that's where the hair is uncovered. By the way, another couple of elements. It's really interesting because in this section it also deals with the Nazir. The Nazir drinks wine. By the way, the Nazir is a make-believe Kohen. And it's really interesting that what happens over here is that we have this element of Own being given wine, and then his wife uncovering her hair. I think she's making a statement. I think she's saying, I'm innocent. We are all innocent. Your war against Moshe is not a justified war. Nothing has happened, but what bothered them? What troubled them so much? I know exactly what troubled them, but you'll have to give me a second, and I'll get to this. I want to point something out, which maybe we haven't thought about or haven't noticed, or maybe we just don't know. One, when it comes to the story of Datan of Aviran and the Egyptian who's beating them, the Midrash gives us a backstory to that that was never really clear why it gave us this backstory. It said that Egyptian went and slept with Datan's wife. There was an issue of infidelity there taking place. There's different midrashim, different ways of reading it, but that's one thing. Another thing, which is a backstory, which also we may not have noticed, and I'm not going to read all the sources right now about it, is that Midrash says that Cain was born with a twin sister, but Heva was born with two twin sisters, and that drives Cain crazy, and he tries to get the twin sister who is supposed to be the wife of Hevel, and there is this background of infidelity in all of these stories as well. Again, I don't want to work so hard and to show it, but it's there all the way through. But what's really going on? Because a lot of this may be metaphor, a lot of this may be literal, but I want to at least show you where the metaphor is and where it goes, because the whole process of Sota really did come up another place that we were, again, not necessarily paying attention to. So let me say a couple more things, and then I'm going to wrap all of this up. Why were the men suspicious of their wives? So let me read a midrash to you. The midrash says as follows: "Vatikvenu benot slavchad oto ador yunashim godrot ma'ashan nashim portzim." The women built fences where the men broke them. Shekena matzesh amar lem Aaron perkun ismei azahav. This is, we're right back again by the chayta ekel. Aaron says to them, and this was a delay tactic: "Bring me all of your women, all of your wives' earrings." The women refused, and they yelled to their husbands. Like, Moshe's not here, you're going to start making an egel? What's the matter with you people? The women were not involved, and the women were not involved in that sin as well. And he goes on to prove that from the text of in Bamidbar, and says, the women were not involved. So now, I want to go to the twisted male psyche. Why in the world are the women not obeying their husbands, and they're on Moshe's side every single time? So what happens to the distorted male psyche? It must be that that Moshe has some kind, Moshe's Rasputin. You like that? I just turned Moshe into Rasputin. Moshe has this unholy control over these people. Moshe is able to somehow convince these women to be on his side every single time, and the men are upset that the women don't sin with them when it comes to the Chayta Egel, that they didn't sin with them when it came to the sin of the golden calf, when it comes to the sin of the spies. And their conclusion is, it must be that Moshe has some kind of thing going on over here, and that's where this whole twisted thing comes from. One more element to help try this up a little bit more: what happens when Moshe comes down from the mountain and sees them all worshiping the golden calf? He takes the golden calf and he grounds it down and turns it into water. He makes them drink them, which is the process of sota taking place, because the Jewish people cheated on God. So this whole process of sota, this whole metaphor of On Ben Pelet's wife uncovering her hair, and essentially what is she saying? You know, you were starting up with Moshe because you're accusing him of all kinds of things. I am innocent. Moshe is innocent. What is the matter with you people? You know, you have Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, again, I'm saying is that now we understand that's why the Gemara and the Midrash, one line after the other, said she uncovered her hair by the doorway. And then right afterwards it says, oh, they all accused Moshe of infidelity with all these married women. And you're saying, you're scratching, you say, what in the world? And what's the reason for this? Because the women were righteous. And people don't understand righteousness. That's really what's so twisted. They don't understand Moshe's righteousness. They don't understand the women's righteousness. They don't know what's going on over here. So what I'm, and those of you who are really interested in the Kabbalistic line and all of this, there are Kabbalistic sources that connect Moshe and Hevel, and sources that connect Korach together with Cain, and saying that we have, you know, this whole situation coming back at us all over again. Let me just wrap this up, and what did we see today? This was complicated. The shiur wasn't so easy. It was complicated. Why was it complicated? Because there were too many moving parts. And the reason there are too many moving parts is because we have Korach, we have Datan Aviram, we have On, and we have the 250 people, and it's not the same thing. They're different. By the way, where does Korach end up? Korach, was he burnt? Or was he swallowed up? So let me at least try to resolve that for you, because it's not clearly stated when we look in our sources, at least, but it is a little clearer in another section. And that is back in, it is in chapter 26, Perek Kaf Vav, Bamidbar. 25, by the way, is the Rishalmi that tells us that the firstborn served as Kohanim until the Chayta Egel. And over here at the very end, it says, Eila b'chorot she'kriva la'egel t'chila. And once they worshiped the Egel, they lost it. By the way, quite ironically, the rabbi who teaches that, of course, is Rabbi Levi, is the one who teaches that the Levium ended up taking the place of the firstborn. So I am not going to find this today. Here we go, source 36. So now you realize that when, remember that I said that was a dangling thing? They're also Kriya Edah. They're the ones who are the instigators in this attack against Moshe and Aaron, even though it's different people. So here is where it's really clear that Korach ends up dying with Datan Aviram, which is actually quite clarifying. So, because we didn't know what to do with Korach. Was Korach sincere or was he not sincere? So we have over here 250 people who are sincere. They're holy. They're holy people, even though the Tehillim calls them wicked holy people. But they are people who really believe that they're holy. And they go and they follow. They take the gauntlet and they go and they take the incense and they die. They die another Revi'u's death. So that was one thing that we connected, which is very, very clear. On the other hand, what we have by Datan Aviran, they die a death of the ground opening up and swallowing them. And now we learn that Korach was with them, which means that Korach was ultimately really more with Datan Aviran. It was more of attack against Moshe. It wasn't just against Aaron. Aaron was the excuse, but now you realize a manipulation took place. Korach had an attack against Moshe, but the excuse was Aaron. The 250 people go against Aaron because they want to be Kohanim, and they're pawns in all of this, and that's why the ground opens up, and therefore the real jealousy over here is the jealousy of Cain. And you go, you can get past this Cain. Well, I guess he couldn't. And therefore, I pointed out, again, so many moving parts today. You're going to have to listen to this share again, so I apologize for that. But realize what else happened over here. What we have is Korach possibly being one of the Levim who kills the brother, just like Cain does with Hevel. So we have that whole story again, but the Cain and Hevel story had a different echo taking place, and that was with Datan Aviran, where Moshe comes in to protect his brother, kills the Egyptian to protect the brother, and over there Datan Aviran, who we assume it's them, open the mouth and says, who put you in charge, because their attack is against Moshe. So that's what I'm saying, there's multiple issues taking place over here, but then there was this whole other strand picked up by the Gemara and the Midrash, and that is that part of all of this is because they're upset with their wives. They're upset that they didn't sin as well. They're upset that they have too much faith in Moshe, and that's where Own's wife stands up, and she says, excuse me, I'm going to put an end to this. Korach's wife maybe pushes him into all of this. You know, why aren't you more successful? Why aren't you like your cousins? But Own, she stands up, and she sees right through all of this. This is the Binayate Ra. She just sees through all of this. And she says, please, this is demagoguery. You're not going to be in charge. Not everybody's in charge. We can't make everybody the Kohen Gadol. We can't make everybody Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not going to happen. I'm going to save you. But the way that she saves, by the entrance, by the gate, by the entrance to the tent, uncovering the hair, going through that sota process, as it were, essentially declaring her innocence and the innocence of all the women over here, and ultimately, therefore, also by extension, declaring Moshe's innocence, she's saying to them, you know, you think you're holy, but if you think you're more holy than Moshe, there's something really wrong over here. And she understands and exploits their holiness just like Korach exploited their holiness. Korach exploits their holiness in order to get them to march and to do the dirty work for them and march to their deaths. She exploits their holiness to save her husband, and the only reason she saves is because he ultimately does trust his wife, unlike all these other people who unfortunately on this midrashic level didn't. So what a story over here. One twisted mind together with a couple of people who have this who have this real anger issues. Again, Korach with Datan Aviran, Own gets saved. All of these displaced people, Levi who feels displaced, Reuven who feels displaced, the firstborn who feel displaced, and all these people feeling sorry by themselves, creating this whole narrative in their minds about how evil Moshe is, and their conclusion is that Moshe is evil and they're tzaddikim, and there's something wrong with this story. Because what's the end of the story? Moshe emet, v'torato emet. Moshe is true, and Moshe is holy. But what a sad story. You can have a leader like Moshe, and instead of appreciating who you have as your leader, you end up accusing him of the worst possible things. And then we wonder why we don't get better leaders, because what in the world would we do to them?